Radio, broadcast every Friday here at WNCK Radio, 8 a.m., hosted by syndicated columnist Ray Hanania and Layla Al-Husseini. Get information on show guests and topics by visiting RadioBolivie.com. We want to hear your views. Call in during the show by dialing 248-557-3300. And now, Radio Bolivie.
And good morning and welcome to Radio Bolivie. I'm Ray Hanania.
And I am Ali Yunus.
Hey, Ali, good morning. How are you on this Friday, February 15th?
I'm doing good. Friday is a day of a protest in the Arab world, but not here in the United States. It's just another working day.
Is Friday really a protest day, you think? It's kind of like the Middle East weekend is really Friday and Saturday, right? And then the work week is Sunday through Thursday.
Yes, it is the Middle East weekend, but the Friday, it's a protest day because it's a Friday prayer where people go gather in the mosques and there you have a huge numbers and then protest after the prayer ends and people go down to the streets and conduct their protest over this dictator or that dictator. You know, the Arab world is filled with dictatorships.
Yeah. So
Friday is a convenient day to gather people to protest.
All right, I like that. Let me remind everybody, you're listening to Radio Bolivie. We're brought to you by Zied Brothers Importing at Zied.com. Prominent Michigan accident attorney Jumana K. Ruz at JumanaKRuz.com. Jake's Candy at 248-747-2223. And Icon Computers at MyIconComputers.com. We also partner with a number of media, including MC Gold TV, Sabeel Media, The Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, Life for Relief and Development, and the Dearborn Free Press. Good morning, Michigan is also a partner hosted by award-winning journalist Layla Al-Husseini, who does her program right here on WNZK AM 690, Monday through Thursday at 8 a.m., leaving Friday protest day to myself and Ali Yunus. So, Ali, in fact, just that is a good segue because one of our topics, I think, is this hunger strike by Samer Issawi, who's been in prison. He was released. He was sentenced, I think, in 2002 during the crackdown of against the Palestinians when Israel was trying to destroy the peace process. And then he was released in the prisoner exchange, and then they rearrested him in Jerusalem, and I think that was like August 1st or something. And he's been in prison, which will be this Sunday, will be 201 days. That's a record hunger strike. He's been on a hunger strike since then.
Yes. Unfortunately, this is a story of many Palestinian prisoners held in Israel. Samer Issawi distinguished himself by being the longest prisoner who has been on a hunger strike. And I should explain to the viewers that Israel, when they arrest somebody, they don't have to hold them for a trial or due process like here in America, although this is what we'll talk about if with President Obama, that you could have administrative detention without a trial or due process for American citizens to some extent, of course. But in Israel, it's a matter of policy, and it's permissible within the Israeli law to hold the prisoners without even charging them. So Samer Issawi is such a case. He's been a hunger strike for over 200 days now, demanding his release or even charge or go to trial. To see why he has been charged. But unfortunately, this is the policy of Israel. Israel feels the strongest country in the Middle East, and they could do whatever they want against their Palestinian victims.
Yeah, it's this is really tragic when you think about it. I think the longest, they just tweeted something about the longest hunger striker, Palestinian hunger striker, is a guy named Kader Adnan, who went on strike, I think, 66 days. And the record strike, I mean, listen, hunger strikes are a nonviolent form of protest by people that are oppressed. And the guy who really kind of brought it to the attention of the West was Mahatma Gandhi. you know, who went on his longest strike, though, was 27 days. And then there was an Irish revolutionary who went on a hunger strike for 97 days, I think. And two of Gandhi's disciples refused food for 116 days. But this guy is going on 200 days. They say that you die after not eating 60 days. That's phenomenal.
Yes. Of course, probably he has been sustained by water. But this is the tragic situation Palestinians face in Israel and detention. And if you look at the political situation there, you see the Palestinian Authority is virtually helpless.
Right, they are. They're completely helpless. But listen, I mean, that's a whole nother subject. They are helpless, but, you know, the extremists in our community have done a great job, probably a better job of neutering the Palestinian moderate leadership than they have of achieving their goal of creating one state. Wouldn't you say? I mean, they're good at, you know, attacking Israel, but they're great at attacking their own leaders.
Well, I don't think the weakness of the Palestinian Authority had to do being neutered by the extremists. I mean, the extremists were there and are still with us before and after the Palestinian Authority.
But they have gotten stronger, a lot stronger.
Well, the weakness of the Palestinian Authority is inherent in its Oslo Accord, in which that they accepted essentially a bad deal from Israel.
Right.
And this is the source of their weakness. Not weakness come from extremists or secularists or moderates. They had the chance. They had the money. The Arab world supported them with money. The U.S. gave them $200 million a year at the time.
Yeah,
Europeans supported them.
But you forget that the Palestinians, before they accepted Oslo, had been fighting since 1967 on their own, not including the inept leadership of the Arab world. The PLO was formed in 66, 67, and then they've been fighting ever since before Oslo, and they never succeeded at anything. They never liberated one inch of Palestine. They were never close to doing it. So Oslo was viewed as really, you know, a victory in comparison to that. Now, when we forget about all the suffering of the Palestinians that the PLO did and had to go through, yeah, Oslo looks terrible. But, you know, everything is relative, isn't it? There's no relativity in the Arab world, is there? It's all or nothing, right?
Well, that's true. But I think your comparison is perhaps, you know, off the track, Ray. Because
that's okay. That's all right.
Yeah.
You can offend me.
I could criticize you.
I know. I'm joking.
I mean, you're not going to kill me. I hope
no.
You're not going to. I'll go on a hunger
no,
strike.
No, but some of the extremists would do that. See, that's my problem with the extremists. You say something they don't like, they go berserk on you more than they will on, you know, criticizing Israelis.
Well, I think we should not even interact with extremists because it's a futile to have a discussion with them.
Yeah, but don't you think the extremists dominate our community? I mean, look at the only successes we have. Are the extremists who take a just issue, because our Palestinian cause is just, and they not only fight for the justice, but then they fight to silence anybody who has any opinion. They impose censorship, all the things they complain about, they do. I mean, it's really a tragedy. You and I would never be able to survive, you know, in the Gaza, you know, talking the way we do.
Well, I think Hamas... you know, when we're talking about extremists, there are shades and colors and variations.
Yes, there are. I agree.
You know, Hamas, you talk about relativity, and in comparison, which was, I was going to criticize that, but let me take your word for it and say, in relativity, Hamas, in comparison to jihad movement, or to...
Yes, you're right. They're not that bad.
It becomes a mainstream, even close to secularist organization.
Yes, actually, Hamas is a focused resistance that has used violence, but it's not really like Al-Qaeda or, you know, the other terrorist groups, because Hamas is focused on liberating its people. They're not trying to be anti-American. They're not against U.S., you know, policy. They're against the oppression. So I agree with that, but they have used violence, and they use violence to undermine the peace process.
Yeah.
If it failed, I blame them.
Well, yes, Yasser Arafat, the late Yasser Arafat, used violence. You know, the PLO used violence. Israeli organizations used violence. Violence is an instrument. So
right.
It depends on the timing. Violence is part of politics, but you know when you kill a civilian, you know, it's no longer violence; it becomes terrorism because that's a targeted killing.
But didn't the PLO use a form of violence that was really a protest form of violence? I mean, like when they hijacked the three planes, they didn't crash them into buildings, they didn't kill all the passengers. They put them on a tarmac in Jordan, I think, one time. Black September did that. And then they blew up the planes. And, you know, without those hijackings in which people were not killed, many of them, who would have even talked about Palestinians? No, the U.S. refused to even recognize us, the West.
Yes, Ray. But from a public relations perspective, everybody talking about Palestinians as terrorists.
Yes. No, you're right. But that's our fault, though. I blame the activists because, you know what, their emotions supersede reason because there is a way to talk to people, and we've never used that. I mean, you and I can talk, and even though we disagree on many things, we still have an understanding. There are things that you say that I think are important, and I need to appreciate and understand, and vice versa. But, you know, when you talk to some of these activists, it's all or nothing. There's no – it's the emotion. I remember growing up, and I'm sure you did too, in a family environment or a community environment where the great-grandfather, the oldest person in the family, dictated how we lived. And if you did anything that disagreed with him, even if I love my grandfather and great-grandfather, but they had, like, third-grade educations, and you couldn't talk to them.
Well, I don't know about your family.
Very angry.
I don't know about your dictatorial family, Mr. Ray, but I did not grow up in such an environment. You know, my father, God bless his soul, you know, he was open. You know, he lived in Germany. He lived in Europe. Yeah. So he was much more open as far as traditional Arab father.
So was my dad. But, you know, living in a community, if you dared to stand up and say something that didn't fit the thing, I mean, it was the emotion.
But sometimes that's important, Ray, because now you let when you raise a family, especially in America, if you try to discipline your child, I'm talking about if you're a regular American or ethnic American, Arab or otherwise,
right.
It's very hard to control the environment in which that children, the likelihood of your sons or daughter, go on drugs, not listening to you, not going through education. It's very difficult to control the environment in which our children live in which you try to have them to have a better life, to the best of your knowledge or the way you see it as a better life. It's very difficult in America today where family values are breaking down. It's okay to let your children not go to school, not to control them. You know, I think family values in America, the way we understand it as a traditional family values, as it used to be in the 50s, in the 40s, in the 60s in America, it's no longer there. And I think it's very, very difficult for a traditional culture like the Arab culture or Eastern culture, whether Indian, Chinese, Japanese, all the Asiatic cultures or African cultures tend to be traditional. In America, it's very difficult now to have a traditional culture setting for your family.
Well, what I'd like to do is, we're going to take a break, but what I'd like to do is talk about, let's kind of expand on that, and then later we'll talk about Obama's speech and how the Middle East was notably absent. You know, it was almost like
Israel, yes.
Right, except for Israel. Of course, God forbid, you know, that anybody would ever consider civil rights anyplace else. But let's take a break. But when we come back, let's talk about this issue of Samer Issawi. Not so much the specifics, but it's a story of a Palestinian civil rights, and it's not getting any coverage. I mean, a guy who goes on a hunger strike for 200 days and not one mainstream American newspaper writes about it. You know, what does that tell you? That not just that the media in the U.S. and Israel is biased, but doesn't it say something about our own activism, that our activists are failures?
Well, I haven't seen Al Jazeera coverage of Samer Issawi, or Al Arabiya coverage of Samer Issawi, or the mainstream Arab media covering. So
right. No, that's what I'm saying. Is it because the media just is ignoring him, or is it because our activists, they don't understand how to communicate? I mean, if this were an Irish activist in a prison, in a British prison, I can promise you that it would be easy to take that issue and exploit it for media coverage. But let's take a quick break and let's continue right after the break. How's that?
Okay.
All right, I'm Ray Hanania here at Radio Ballady.
And I'm Ali Yunus.
And we're here at WNZK AM 690 every Friday, chewing the fat, the halal fat, by the way, and even kosher, which is fine, you know, and on issues of importance involving the Middle East and the Arab world. The, Radio Ballady,
and the Arab community as well.
And the Arab community, of course. RadioBallady.com is our website, and you can get information on all of these topics and download our podcast and also get information on our advertisers. But we're going to take a quick break for our sponsors, and when we come back, we'll continue it right after these messages.
منتجات زياد من عائلتنا إلى عائلتكم أفضل المنتجات الغذائية على الإطلاق ماركات سلطان كرافت نسلي بوك ريغل بيكان دانا بالإضافة إلى مجموعة أكبر من المنتجات الغذائية التي تحبها تجدها في كافة المحلات للمزيد من المعلومات قم بزيارة موقعنا زياد.com منتجات زياد من عائلتنا إلى عائلتكم.
Jake's Candy, 2-for-$1 candy bags and $1 candy bags available. Wholesale and distribution. Jake's Candy has been satisfying the sweet tooth of thousands of people for over a decade. Now providing delivery service to Columbus, Cincinnati, and Dayton, Ohio, as well as Rochester and Buffalo, New York, and New York City. For New York service, call Saleh at 718-213-1264. Or for more information, call Jake's Candy at 248-747-2223. That's 248-747-2223.
It was my job to save people. Until one night, I was in a car accident. I couldn't work, and the insurance company, they fought me every step of the way. I didn't know what to do.
Call 866-YOUR-RIGHT.
I'm Shumana Kairouz. I know what it's like to be refused your rights. When you call, my attorneys and I will fight to get you the compensation you deserve.
Jemana handled my medical benefits and lost wages, and she got me a settlement.
If you have been injured, call 866-YOUR-RIGHTS.
Ziad Brand. Quality products from our family to yours. Ziad Brothers Importing offers the finest quality products, including brands like Sultan, Kraft, Nestle, Hook, Rico Picon, Donna, and many more. Ask your retailer to carry these fine products because you deserve the very best. For more information, visit our website at www.ziad.com. That's www.ziad.com. Ziad, quality products from our family to yours.
And welcome back to Radio Ballady. I'm Ray Hanania.
And I'm Ali Yunus.
And we're kind of talking about the real tragic story of Samer Essaoui, who is a Palestinian activist. He was a member of an organization that some groups might argue really was violent, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. But he was never, I don't think he ever had a trial. I mean, isn't that one problem with when we deal with labels like extremists and terrorists, quote-unquote, from Israel, that they just use that word as a blanket thing when they attack everybody and they call him a terrorist, but they never explain or charge him or even give him a chance to refute the charges in a democratic civil rights justice courtroom, right?
Well, even if you are Mahmoud Abbas from the Israeli perspective, if you
you're a terrorist.
You're a terrorist.
Right.
If you don't do what they want you to do, you are a terrorist. I mean,
yeah.
No matter what you do, you are a terrorist. So that's a tragic situation with Israel, and because it is a huge imbalance between the Palestinians and Israel, and the Palestinians accepting a bad deal, and now they feel the consequences, and the Arab world the Arab world is very busy with its spring, with the demonstration, and Syria is unstable. Syria is breaking apart, pro and against Bashar al-Assad, and Iraq is unstable. Jordan is shaky, and it's a weak country, obviously. And Iraq is becoming unstable, coming out of war, and is even
and
more
Egypt
unstable
is,
today.
Is unstable in some respects.
So Israel, you know, in its prime, it could do whatever it wants without anybody trying to counterbalance the Israeli policies. And when you have a President Obama, it's not even one to mention Israel in a negative light or to criticize Israel.
Well, before we go into Obama's speech, which I want to do, and I think that's a great topic because it was notable. I barely mentioned the Middle East, and I think that as a lame duck president, he could. But what responsibility do we as activists, I don't mean just you and me, I mean Palestinians, I mean, are we effective? Seriously, I mean, who's listening to us? Do we just talk to ourselves? We don't support each other. We argue over politics. I mean, you and I argue over politics, but we can still work together. You know what it's like, and I call them extremists, but you argue with them, and they'll ban you for life. They'll call you a Zionist. They'll call you an Israeli. They'll call you whatever. They don't care. They'll do everything they can because it's easier for them to tear us Arabs down and turn against themselves than it is to stand up to what Israel is doing, which is immoral, unethical, and wrong.
I believe you should not even pay attention to them, because no matter what you do, they will call you all kind of labels, a traitor, a spy, stooge of the West. So I think it's futile to even engage with them. I think for Palestinian activists and for the Palestinian people in general, it should be a work in progress. I think it should be a national mission of sorts.
But we've gotten worse, though, over the years. I mean, listen, 20, 30 years ago, when I first got involved as an activist, Edward Said and Ibrahim Abulughad, they were, you know, involved in the community. We go to meetings with them. Ibrahim Abulughad was basically my mentor here. You know, he's the one who brought me in under the wing. And, you know, maybe had I not run into him one day at the Arab Community Center on 59th
and Kedzie, you would have been a doctor now.
I would have been a successful doctor.
Right. But, so in other words, he ruined your life.
Well, what I'm trying to say is they were great people. They understood the need for dialogue and discussion. But we were more organized back then. We were more together. Today we're more divided. Why is that?
I think, well, not only we are divided in America, but also divided in the Arab world. I think for Palestinians do not behave and act and live in a vacuum. They are part of the Arab world, part of the Arab culture, part of the Middle East. So if the Middle East or the Arab culture is a strong, powerful, stable, that will reflect on the Palestinians. When the Middle East or the Arab culture or the Arab world is weak, divided, unstable, fragmented, so is the Palestinians. So imagine if you take this situation with Israel. If Europe is in the Dark Ages or unstable, weak, fragmented, I think Israel will be weak, fragmented, unstable, because Israel is part of this Western world. It's a Western creation. It's part of the, you know, West try to compensate for the Jewish problem that they had in Europe, and by stabilizing and creating the State of Israel. So I think with the situation with the Palestinians is the same thing. When Egypt is weak, when Syria is weak, when Iraq is weak, Arab world is divided, it's unstable, fragmented Arab culture. I mean, it's a shame to be an Arab nowadays. Nobody wants to identify being an Arab. If you are an Iraqi, you say, I'm an Iraqi. If you are a Syrian, I'm a Syrian. If you are Lebanese, you want to emphasize the particular, you're particularly Lebanese or Syrian or Jordanian, not an Arab. And this is because the Arab culture, the Arab world, is at its weakest in the world. And people are not proud to be an Arab, not proud to be part of this great culture and a great world. And this is transforms itself to the Palestinian. And this is why I think Palestinians are unable to stand up for Israel intellectually, militarily, politically, and all aspects of trying to get themselves together because of such conditions that engulfs the Arab world and the Middle East.
But don't you think our problem, though, as Arabs, and, you know, I'm not saying we're the only ones with problems, but, you know, our problem is that we don't like to acknowledge problems. We don't like to air the dirty laundry. We don't like to talk about, you know, hey, I remember growing up, they said, oh, don't criticize the Palestinians. Don't criticize the extremists. Don't even use the word extremists. Let's pretend they don't exist. Let's ignore them. and we'll move ahead. Don't you have to address a health issue? I mean, if you have cancer, don't you have to go get chemotherapy and, you know, get a treatment to get, you know, to become healthy? You got a heart problem, you go have heart surgery. Why don't we address the issue of, you know, extremism like a health problem, because it makes us unhealthy as a people?
Well, I think the Arab world has been transformed, Ray. I think if you look at the Lebanese media, they are criticizing everybody, and everybody criticizes
everybody.
Yeah, but
they're like the exception, though, right? I mean,
well,
in
Egypt, it's a progress. I mean, with the advent of the communication, Facebook, media, Twitter, everything is out in the open. Even in countries like the Gulf region, like Saudi Arabia, there is criticism. So you can't now live in the Arab world where there are no secrets. And you can't hide the internet. You cannot block the internet. You cannot block iPhones. You cannot block Twitter or Facebook. So it's very difficult nowadays not to engage in real issues in the Arab world without exposing yourselves. I mean, before, dictatorships flourished because there was no media. There was no internet. There was no Al Jazeera or Al Arabiya, pan-Arab media that cover, even though not maybe 100%, but there is coverage. People can switch to CNN. People can read English. People go to the computer and read accounts of what happened in their own country that their own regime would have blocked them. So there is a level of debate. Now, I think when this level of debate can mature enough to become much more peaceful and much more constructive and much more toward positive debate that would bring better outcome for the society, whether in America as the Arab community or for the Egyptian community in Egypt or in Iraq. So I think we are evolving with the world. We're not going backward, hopefully, but I think we are evolving toward much more open debate, because the world has changed.
But wow, how long do we have to wait? I mean, even the Arab Spring, to be honest, it's like they're calling it the Arab Winter. You know, democracy is collapsing there. It's not a, you know, maybe 20 years from now, we might be able to look back and make a real assessment about whether the Arab Spring was an Arab Spring at all or just the collapse of the Arab world. But how long do we have to wait for our people to become adept at communicating and advancing our cause? Why isn't this story about Samar Essawi, for example, a story, you know, the talk of the town, which is a journalism term to refer to something that everybody's talking about? I don't get it. I just don't understand. Are we different? Are the Israelis more adept at media? What is it about us that prevents us from being so successful at conveying a compelling story? This guy's story is the most compelling I've heard. And I blame the extremists, because they just are incapable of telling a great story like Samar Essawi's.
Well, Ray, I mean, I don't want to, but I think you will blame the extremists if somebody slipped on a banana peel.
I would.
Anywhere in the Arab world.
If they slipped on a spot of hummus.
Yes. So it's not the extremists' problem. Anything happened that was not just the extremists, right? Even moderates also, we should have blamed them for not communicating.
I'm writing about it. I'm going to write about it this week.
So it's not just the extremists, you know, who make mistakes. We make mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes. You agree Mahmoud Abbas is not an extremist.
But is
the Palestinian Authority extremist? No.
What are they doing? So.
Are they supporting Saudi
Arabia? They're totally ineffective. You're right.
Yeah. Are they sending press releases? Are they sending spokespeople to the world, to the embassies?
No.
So they're not the extremists. I mean, why blame the extremists? I understand why Hamas is not interested in the story, but I don't understand why Mahmoud Abbas is not interested in the story. See, he's not an extremist.
Well, I think maybe it's because we don't have a pure media, professional media in the Arab world and among our institutions. Because the activists shouldn't be, the end result for them shouldn't be writing the story. The end result for the activists should be figuring out how to convince the mainstream media to write the story. But they don't want to do that. They want to become the story. So all of the stories about Samar Essawi have been written by really extremist groups. And it almost takes a, you know, it paints Samar Issawi's cause as if he were an extremist. And I don't think that's the issue. I think the issue is he's being unfairly punished, you know, by the Israelis, and his hunger strike is being ignored by the media. Listen, I'm not saying I know the answer. I'm just saying that, you know, talking about it, maybe someone out there, if you're listening at 248-557-3300, you want to call in and share your ideas, I'd love to hear what you have to say. But are we really that effective? I mean, ineffective, that we have a guy who is probably the biggest story in the world, and it's as big as Gandhi or Martin Luther King, and we can't even get it to mainstream audiences in our own community. I don't know. Listen, we got to take another fast break here at Radio Ballady. I'm Ray Hanania.
And I'm Ali Yunus.
And we're here at Radio Ballady, WNZK AM 690, every Friday at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. You can go online and listen to us, too, if you're outside of the radio broadcast range, by visiting RadioBallady.com. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue this discussion. Maybe we'll shift over and talk about another failed topic, Barack Obama and his recent speech. We'll be right back right after these messages.
منتجات زياد من عائلتنا إلى عائلتكم أفضل المنتجات الغذائية على الإطلاق ماركات سلطان كرافت نسلي بوك ريغل بيكان دانا بالإضافة إلى مجموعة أكبر من المنتجات الغذائية التي تحبها تجدها في كافة المحلات للمزيد من المعلومات قم بزيارة موقعنا زياد.com منتجات زياد من عائلتنا إلى عائلتكم.
If you get into a car accident, how will you pick up the pieces when you can't work, when the bills pile up? Who will help you? Call 866-YOUR-RIGHTS.
I called Jemana. She took care of everything. My medical bills, lost wages, and even a large settlement.
I am Jumana Kiruz, and I assure you that my team will not stop until you get the most for your rights.
If you've been in a car accident, call Jumana, 866-YOUR-RIGHTS.
Ziad Brand. Quality products from our family to yours. Ziad Brothers Importing offers the finest quality products, including brands like Sultan, Kraft, Nestle, Puck, Rico Picon, Donna, and many more. Ask your retailer to carry these fine products because you deserve the very best. For more information, visit our website at www.ziad.com. That's www.ziad.com.
Now, I should announce, Ali, that sometime in the next few weeks, I don't know the exact time, but we're working on it now. We got to implement the technology, but we're going to slowly migrate to live television broadcast on MLive, which is part of Dandana TV, which is on the Dish Network. And MLive is a very popular station on the Dish Network, broadcasting not just to the Middle East, but also here across the United States. So we'll do it a step at a time. Our first thing will be to get the radio show live on MLive TV, and we'll be able to get the listeners to call in. We'll have an 800 number where they can call in and talk to us at the radio station and watch us. And it'll probably start out with one camera, but I have to figure out because, you know, I'm in Chicago. The radio show is broadcast in Detroit, and you're in where? Israeli prison?
No, I am an undisclosed location, really.
A hidden from the Mukhabarat.
Washington, D.C., but I'm an undisclosed location. When the president gave State of the Union address, they always put a member of the cabinet in an undisclosed location in case of catastrophe.
Just in case
something, God forbid, happened. You know, and so to leave the country. And I remember Dick Cheney was always, you know, hidden.
Who's the one that they put in hiding this time? Do you happen to know?
Yeah, I think it was Chu, was a Chinese-American member of the cabinet. He was, agriculture secretary or the energy secretary, Secretary Chu, who was hidden from the view. Agriculture secretary, I remember. Yeah, Sweden about.
Wow, good job.
Yeah, his
you're
would have
on
been...
top of stuff when you know that.
Yes, I mean
that obscure little fact.
If something, God forbid, happened, we'd have a President Chu, you know, of the United States of America, you know, who will deal with, you know, everything.
Now, and of course, nothing happened at the presidential State of the Union speech that Barack Obama gave. I mean nothing in a broad sense, especially about the Middle East. I mean, he really made it clear that he was sucking up to Israel. But what did he say about the Middle East? Did he say anything? And what should we take out of the fact that he really didn't make the Middle East a big deal?
Well, in the general view, Ray, remember in post-election and prior election, most of the Arab media, all the pundits, all the Middle East analysts said that, and I think you and I have talked about it before,
yes,
that once he's re-elected the lame duck president...
Right, he can do whatever he wants.
Do whatever he wants. And they could just, you know, who will not be worried about Netanyahu or the pro-Israeli lobby or, you know, the Republicans, and he could implement policies. But at this point, you don't see Barack Obama even slowly going toward touching the Middle East.
Right.
His focus is more gun control, the economy, the budget, the deficit, immigration reform, so all domestic policies. So, and when he in the State of the Union, only Israel got to be mentioned, that, you know, reiterating the U.S. commitment for the safety and security for Israel to live in peace and harmony and secure. And he got standing ovation for that.
Is it a strategy, you think, that he focused on jobs and creating good middle-class jobs? I mean, to kind of get people away from what he's being painted as an extremist, you know, to get away from that dialogue so maybe he can actually do something in the Middle East? Or do you think he just realized that, hey, Clinton tried to do stuff for 8 years, didn't work, I'm not going to lose my legacy to the Middle East the way Clinton, you know, almost did, because he did so much, but he failed at achieving anything. What do you think is at play? Is there some strategic, you know, clever move on Obama's part? You know, I'm not going to make it a big issue, but I'm going to, you know, I won't talk about it, I'll just do it. What do you think? Hey, Ellie, sorry about that. Are you there? All right, I'm sorry about that little technological attack from the Mossad.
I think it was not, you know...
the Mossad hit us.
Or maybe, you know, something, you know, hit us, meteoroid, and it's in the news.
Well, you're close to Washington. Obviously, the drones have found you, Allie. Allie,
yes.
Eunice, we're going to have to move you, because I know the drones are, you know, they're flying overhead here in Chicago.
But they
don't know where I really live. I got several safe houses.
Yes, I mean, that's part of the Obama story, the evolving story that, you know, it worries me that President Barack Obama, that who all felt that he is liberal when it comes to civil rights, he will enhance the civil rights, especially coming after 8 years of George W. Bush, when it comes to a Patriot Act that impacted Arab Americans, Muslim Americans, Christian Americans, Hindu Americans, Sikh Americans, everybody else, even, you know, non-hyphenated Americans. But when you look at his policies, he did not close Guantanamo as he promised. He increased his anti-civil rights agenda by authorizing the CIA to kill American citizens abroad, you know, albeit if they were senior Al-Qaeda citizens, but that's dangerous because it violates the Constitution on the outset that, you know, American citizens are entitled to trial. They entitled to
right.
Do
I mean, and it used to be if you were in battle and you were working, like, let's say during World War II, if you were an American working with the Nazis and in battle soldiers killed you as an American, that was considered, okay, that was in a war. But what Obama is doing is taking that whole thing one step further, saying not only can an American be killed if they go to the other side fighting against us, but we can single them out without going to court, without having a trial.
Or try to arrest them.
Or even, right, why waste our time trying to arrest these people? Let's just take them out and kill them. And then we'll just do what the Israelis do and say, oh, they're terrorists, so we have the right to kill them. You're right. That is a dangerous development.
In the U.S., too, there's a passage in the in Congress that authorizes the U.S. government to detain American citizens administratively, similar to what Israel is doing, which is it comes from British law, old British law. But you can arrest American citizens without trial and put them in detention without even affording due process. And I think this is a dangerous precedent.
Didn't you think that would happen under a President Dick Cheney, not a President Barack Obama?
Yes, and that's my disappointment. You know, he's a Democratic president, and, you know, Obama coming from a minority background, a minority has long been oppressed, a minority that has been always fought for civil rights of all Americans.
Well, rights have been taken away from that minority for years.
Yes.
That he would take away rights from other people. That you're right. It's just shocking, isn't it?
Even more than George W. Bush. I mean, I understand why George W. Bush would do, but George W. Bush did not even do half what Obama is trying to do now.
So what's the problem? I mean, what is happening? Is Obama not the person? I mean, listen, I know Obama is the black Jesus, you know, for the Christians. You know, they look at him and they go, he's not Christian enough. He's a Muslim. You know, they'll go after him and denounce him and, you know, question him because they don't like his policies. Yet he is some of his policies are more militarist than the prior administration.
When it comes to U.S. Position on civil rights, I think he is even more. I mean, first of all, he stayed away even from joining the International Criminal Court, which is to the delight of the Republicans.
Right.
So he is appeasing the Republicans. So when it
and
comes,
is that because of Israel? I don't mean to stop your train of thought there, but that's an important point. Is he doing it because the Palestinians now can go to the International Criminal Court?
No,
so
I think
U.S. is protecting Israel by
No, because the U.S. position on that, it's because they want immunity for U.S. soldiers or U.S. nationals
who
been accused of committing war crimes,
right,
because the international peacekeeping, U.S. sends soldiers everywhere. So they want immunity. So let's say if Jordan joins the treaty, they want to sign a bilateral deal with the U.S. or Iraq or any country that exempt U.S. soldiers from joining the ICC. This was the Republican position that Obama adopted. But Obama, you know, for his credit, I mean, he signed the national health care reform, and he withdrew from Iraq as he promised.
So he'll give a guy health care, but then he'll also give an order to shoot him.
Yes, so that's the irony. So, you know, it's a mixed bag for President Barack Obama. He's voted the Man of the Year by the Time magazine. He won a Nobel Peace Prize. But at the same time, you know, he is not popular in the Arab world. He reneged on all his promises. He turned his back on the Palestinians or the Arab world and the Arab Spring, on the Syrians as well. He refuses to engage much more forcefully, and he can, to lead the world in trying to help the Syrian people. And I'm not saying he should engage in a war,
right,
but he could be much more.
There's more that he could do, right? I mean, is more that he could do. Let's go to the phone line at 248-557-3300 and say hello to Jamal. Hey, Jamal, thanks for calling. Sorry we missed you last time.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, Ali.
Good morning.
Well, I mean, why you guys are surprised that Barack Obama betrayed the Arabs or his promises? He betrayed his own here. So what's the big deal about it? Who's more important? The people who elected him? And he promised the sun and the moon and all this, you know, young generation with this and that. He did the best he can.
Well, the dark secret of American politics, Jamal, is that we don't ever elect the best. We only elect the better. So Obama was the better candidate out of the bunch, not the best that could have been elected.
Yeah, what I'm saying here, Barack Obama did the best he can under the circumstances. Now, when it comes to saying that he betrayed the Arabs, he betrayed this and that, well, he betrayed his own days here.
Well, didn't he lie to us? Didn't he say that, you know, wasn't the whole purpose of Obama's election a statement on the standing up for civil rights? And here's a guy that's the icon of civil rights achievement in the United States, and he doesn't stand up for civil rights. He talks the talk, but he doesn't walk the walk.
Well, I think many in African American community also disappointed in Barack Obama.
Yeah.
He did the best he can under the circumstances. Let's go back to Syria. Ali, you guys are pushing for Syria. What do you want the world to do to the Syrians when the Arabs around them are pushing terrorism inside Syria?
Yeah, but do we agree that Bashar al-Assad is a dictator? Can't we agree on that? That, you know, he's a tyrant and a terrible person.
Bashar al-Assad was in his way to do better for Syria. They censored that. They don't want Syria to become better. I think, and I believe for my deep heart, that Syria was going in the direction where democracy can come little by little. Now, it takes years. So what?
Jamal, let me interrupt for a second, if you allow me, please. And I appreciate your point, and I'm not far off from you. But I think 4 years of Assad's family rule in Syria, when democracy will come 100 years from now, I think we should give any family who rules an Arab country, any leader, we should not say a family, 4 years.
Term limits for dictators.
Or eight years, not yes. 40 or 50 or 60.
Right, not 40 or 50. Like, we live in presidents for life. Yeah, hey, Jamal, listen, thank you for the call, though. I appreciate it.
Why are we not talking about Saudi Arabia? Why are we not talking about this, Mickey Mouse countries back there?
We could talk about all of them, Jamal, but Jesus, we can only start one at a time. I mean, honestly, if we opened up the entire ball of wax, see, I think Saudi Arabia would change if Egypt changed. And if it really changed, I think that these other countries would change.
Saudi Arabia already starting war in Syria, so everybody will take their eyes on the prize.
That's true. Everybody's trying to funnel extremists into Syria, as Syria during the Iraq War funneled terrorists into Iraq. Everybody is doing the same game,
yeah,
Jamal.
And Iran is doing all this stuff.
Iraq,
I mean, is there one Arab country that's really democratic? Let's be honest. Come on. They're all dictators. You tell me there's one Arab country that doesn't arrest their people. The focus, though, is on Syria, and something is being done, and we got to figure out a way to resolve it. Jamal, listen, thank you for the call. I got to move on because we got to take a break also. It is 10 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm Ray Hanania.
And I'm Ali Yunus.
And this is Radio Ballady at WNZK AM 690. We're going to take a final break. And when we come back, we'll take phone calls at 248-557-3300 or chew the fat, the halal and kosher fat, on the topic of Barack Obama and his State of the Union speech. We'll be right back right after these messages.
Ziad Brand. Quality products from our family to yours. Ziad Brothers Importing offers the finest quality products, including brands like Sultan, Kraft, Nestle, Hook, Rico Picon, Donna, and many more. Ask your retailer to carry these fine products because you deserve the very best. For more information, visit our website at www.ziad.com. That's www.ziad.com. Ziad, quality products from our family to yours.
The American Muslim Center works for the community. It establishes goodness, virtue, and develops relationships between the Muslim communities as well as regional and national non-Muslim communities. The American Muslim Center on Outer Drive in Dearborn. Call 313 313- 865-9314 or visit AmericanMuslimCenter.org.
It was my job to save people. Until one night, I was in a car accident. I couldn't work, and the insurance company, they fought me every step of the way. I didn't know what to do.
Call 866-YOUR-RIGHTS.
I'm Shumana Kairouz. I know what it's like to be refused your rights. When you call, my attorneys and I will fight to get you the compensation you deserve.
Jumana handled my medical benefits and lost wages, and she got me a settlement.
If you have been injured, call 866-YOUR-RIGHTS.
منتجات زياد من عائلتنا إلى عائلتكم أفضل المنتجات الغذائية على الإطلاق ماركات سلطان كرافت نسلي باك ريغل بيكان دانا بالإضافة إلى مجموعة أكبر من المنتجات الغذائية التي تحبها تجدها في كافة المحلات للمزيد من المعلومات قم بزيارة موقعنا زياد.com منتجات زياد من عائلتنا إلى عائلتكم.
And welcome back to Radio Ballady. I'm Ray Hanania.
I am Ala Yunus.
And we thank our advertisers, you know, Ziad Brothers, Jumana Kairouz, all of them, because we wouldn't be on the air, would we, if it wasn't for them.
That's true. And they're not for Saudi Arabia. And like Jamal, I mean, we're not supported by Saudi Arabia. I wish we were. We would have been like a satellite channel.
Right. Yeah, it would be nice. I mean, listen, I do write for the Saudi Gazette. But that's a newspaper, and you know what? It doesn't mean that I embrace all the policies of Saudi Arabia, but that's then true. I also don't embrace the policies of all the extremists, you know, that are out there that...
That's your favorite word, yes.
Yeah, it is my favorite word because they defend, you know, there's some extremists that, and again, this is like outside of the argument about whether...
Saudi Arabia has more extremists than any country in the other world.
I don't know. What do you call a dictator that's run Syria for 40 years? Isn't that a little extreme?
Yes, and the he's not a religious extremist. You know, Saudi
Arabia, but see, that's a difference. So we're talking about a secular extremist versus religious extremist, right?
Well, that's dictatorships, yes, it's a form of extremism. But, you know, I want to mention to Jamal that all countries have used terrorists to funnel into other countries to settle scores or to weaken that country. America did it. Saudi Arabia, Egypt did it when they funneled jihadists,
right,
you know, who were our allies during the 80s.
We funded Saddam Hussein. We gave him the weapons of mass destruction.
The Soviet invaded Iran. The Soviet invaded Afghanistan. Iran and Syria, funneled terrorists into Iraq. And that actually saved them from George W. Bush to invade either Syria and Iraq, or Syria or Iran after Iraq. So everyone is doing the same thing to each other. Syria also helped the Kurdish rebellions against Turkey. And then when they settled with Turkey, they stopped doing that. You know, Iran funded the Kurdish against Iraq. So it's a game they all play using pawns, using terrorists, using extremists on either side to help their own case. And it is unfortunate that at the same time, Syria is being destroyed. Syria is a key country.
Yeah, but isn't that what the extremists do, though? That when the protesters try to bring democracy, let's say, to Egypt and to Syria, what's the first thing that happens? The Syrian government wants al-Qaeda to come in and blow things up so they can say, aha, look, as soon as we lifted our tyranny, the terrorists snuck in. And
yes,
they're blowing things up, and you better forget about democracy and let my family rape and pillage the country for another 20 years.
Right. And I think, you know, and you're right on that, Ray, because what Bashar al-Assad is trying to say, his argument is either me or you will have al-Qaeda terrorists who will impose.
That's what Saddam Hussein said, didn't he? Basically the same thing.
Yes, so it's similar in a way to your own argument that everything is to blame on extremists, either me.
Well, not everything to blame on them. I'm just saying that they're a major factor in undermining change.
I'm going to pick on you a little bit, Ray. I mean, I know you will not kill me if I pick on you.
I don't know. I'm thinking about it right now, but go ahead.
Throne or blow me up. So I could freely pick on you, and that's a democracy. And this is the level of debate we should have in our community, that I could tolerate criticism.
Right.
I could tolerate debate, even if it's against me, against my arguments. and without fear of retribution. And I think this is the level of debate the Arab American community should have, that without, you know, having becoming enemies. And I think that's a healthy trend we should have, like Jamal calling us and everybody calling
us.
Yeah. He disagreed with us.
Right.
But
I like listen to him, absolutely. Yes.
And I like his
idea. I respect his views.
Yeah, his argument, you know, counters my argument, you know, and vice versa. But back to Assad and Saudi Arabia. And we should not, you know, as journalists or as activists, you know, hold a regime as a mantra that we should always love or hate,
right,
you know, forever. And
we
should
not go out of our way to defend any of these governments.
Right. Even an American government, you know, American people, you know, American people don't have Barack Obama's picture in their living rooms. They don't dance with Barack Obama. They don't have songs for George Bush or Barack Obama like we do. I mean,
right,
we go out of our way to love Saddam Hussein, love Bashar al-Assad, love King Abdullah, love King whatever.
The difference, of course, though, is that Barack Obama cannot, you know, he can only serve two terms, a maximum of 10 years, you know, total. No president can serve more than 10 years. And he can't even run for election, you know, a second term. If you succeeded somebody, served 3 years, and then you run for election once, that's 7 years. You can't run again if the next four terms would take you over 10 years. We have limits on that that creates, you know, an ability to, you know, monitor how things are done. But they don't have that in the Arab world, do we?
That's true, and that's
why, a problem.
Why, that's what worries me, because I like to see different economic policy than, you know, Assad's family or King Abdullah's family, you know, for 70 years, 60 years. Can I see new faces? Can I see a different kind of policy? I mean, I can't live in a country where I was born to see the king, and my son will be born to see the same king, or his son will see his son's
right.
king. Come on, you know, I mean, the world has changed, and we should change too. We should evolve. That we should, legitimacy should come from us. It's not from this leader for life. He should grant me death or life.
Presidents for life, they also afflict and infect American Arab organizations. We have presidents for life, the mentality that once you're in charge, you own it. And that's why we, instead of rallying around your group, we'll go out and start our own organization where we can be president for life and fight you. I mean, that's what part of the problem is. Listen, Ali, give a final word to you, and then we got to sign off. The bottom line on Syria and Obama, because we did segue into Syria.
Well, I think the bottom line, let's not forget Samurai Sawi. All the Arab community should write letters
yes.
to the editor, should engage in trying to, because when helping Samurai Sawi, we're helping ourselves.
Yes.
We train ourselves, we build connections and contact with the media. This is our causes, our issues. Also, on the Arab-American level, we should engage with the media. We should engage, call the White House, part of
do
the democracy.
Do something, in other words, do
call
something.
Call senator,
right.
call a, you know, congressman, voice your objection, call us too. Voice,
yes.
you know, object to us. I mean, we're not going to kill you.
Right.
We will not, you know, send the drones to you. We will not punish you, put your
well,
family
let's not go too far. Hey, listen, Ellie, I got to let you go. I'm Ray Hanania.
And I'm Ali Yunus.
And this has been Radio Ballady. Our website, remember, is radioballady.com. Go there, hook up with us, friend us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter, and download our podcast. We'll talk to you later. We'll be back again next Friday. To talk more about the Middle East, and you guys have a great week. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody.
We